Hi everyone, welcome to North and South Podcast. This is Tim speaking. This is a creativity podcast. As you know, I like to speak to people who are involved in the world of creativity. Also people locally in the Bootle Liverpool area who've made a difference and have done well and have got advice to share and stories to tell. And it's a real honour today to speak to Dave McCluskey, who is a local writer, and he was put in touch with me via Chris Lewis, who's been on an earlier podcast at the Big Onion in Bootle Strand, which is a great little local enterprise initiative looking to get people up and running in business in the Bootle area. And for me, business, politics, history, writing, all of this creativity, it all overlaps, and it's all about getting people's voices and messages out there. So, Dave, great to have you on the podcast. Do you want to just start off telling us a little bit about your background and how you became a writer? And we'll go through what you've written in a minute.
Yeah, no worries, mate. No worries. First off, though, I don't know about it being an honour to have me on. I'll jump on anything, mate.
No worries. It's always a pleasure, mate.
Right, yeah. I'm an author. I started writing late in life. I haven't got no writing qualifications or anything like that. I left school, and I was in I left school to work in Rushworth, you know, the music shop in town, because I had dreams of being a rock star, being a heavy metal guitarist / singer. And then when I realised that I didn't have the talent to be a heavy metal guitarist / singer, I was a postie for a while, and I hated the post office. I just didn't like the job. So it took me to university, and then when I was in university, I did computers, and then I came out of computers and went into the computing world, and I absolutely hated that as well. Do you know what I mean? It was a necessity for my hate me job, hate me job. And then one day, and just completely out of the blue, and I'm 50 in January, in July, sorry, and this must have been about 8 or 9 years ago. And my daughter was lying in bed, Christmas Eve, funny enough. And she was lying in bed, and I was reading it the night before Christmas, you know, where I'm Clement Moore. And it's like, oh, it was the night before Christmas and all around the house. And when I finished this, she was fast asleep. So it shows you how bored my voice is, you know what I mean, for like Christmas Eve, and I can get a 4-year-old to sleep. And I literally got out of bed, and I thought to myself, do you know what? I reckon I could do that. So over the Christmas period, I just got like this like idea in my head about this, like 'twas the night before Christmas, and like a little rhyming story. So I actually wrote down and I wrote a little story, which was the first story I've ever had published, which was called The Good Behaviour Act. And it's a kid's rhyming story, but it's horror. So it's like, it's what happens if you get on Father Christmas's naughty list. So I literally just had almost like a light bulb moment, you know what I mean? And just got out of bed, just got on my computer and started writing. And the next thing I knew, I had this like a 6-page rhyming story about Father Christmas. So it led me on to doing other ones. And then the next thing I knew, I had like 6, and I created a little comic called Interesting Times. Time spelled with a T-Y-M-E-S, because like all the stories were like horror stories, but all written in rhyme. And then I found an artist online, and that's how I started off. So I didn't have absolutely no writing qualifications. Some writers will tell you that they started writing when they were 3 and stuff like that. But that didn't happen with me. I just didn't have an appetite for it. And then all of a sudden it just went boom. And over the 9 years now, I've written 14 novels, 5 graphic novels, and 12 comics. I like a million and one short stories. So it was like, it was almost like an epiphany, maybe. I don't know. It was just something that must have been in me that just lay dormant and just all of a sudden wanted to come out. When I was 32 or 33.
It's an amazing story.
That doesn't work out there, does it? Yeah.
But it's amazing because, you know, a lot of people, you know, say that like when they were young, it became clear that they had this passion for something. But I think it just goes to show really how much like luck and chance there are about so much of what we do, because you know it sounds like you had an idea on one career very early on. I remember Rushworth in Liverpool. All the Met lads were like, "Oh yeah, Rushworth, in Liverpool."
That was me. I had my head down my back and everything. I had to wear a green tie.
Me too, mate. I was into the art metal when I was younger and wanted to own a band. But like it's like this kind of idea, isn't it? Like you have this little dream when you're young, and then you know you go to university, you study something, and then you realise that's just not working for you. And it was literally just that one little story that night. You thought, wait there, I could do something like this. And
yeah,
it's fascinating because I think it doesn't matter who you are at any point in your life. Something can happen that can just open a doorway for you, can
it? It was like a light switch. I'm not saying like I saw a light, or I'm not saying that there was anything like huge and momentous happening, but it was like a light switch moment, because it was like, do you know what? I could do that. It was like Yossi Hughes in Boys of the Black Stuff, you know, gives a job, I can do that. But it was literally, I just thought, do you know, I'm going to give that a go. And I gave it a go, and I just got a bug for it. I just absolutely and utterly loved it. And like from that moment to this, I'm just writing all the time. I mean, I still work on full time, but I'm just writing and writing and writing. And it's my life now. It's my escape. Do you know what I mean? My escape from the drudgery of everyday 9-to-5 job life and stuff like that. But when I write, it's like you're soaring. Do you know what I mean? It's like you're in control. It's a weird thing. It really is.
Do you know? I'm a bit of a frustrated writer, and like I'm quite creative, and you know I've got a few things going on. But to what extent is it important that you feel that kind of flow state as it is? I mean, many artists refer to it as like a bit of a flow state, that once you get started with something, and you can have writer's block, and you can have bad days, etc. How do you access that flow state? Is it something that you can tap into quite readily, or do you have to work on it?
No. Do you know what? I'm an early riser, right? So my body doesn't let me sleep much after 5:30 in the morning. And it's always been like that. I've always been like an early riser, whether it's freezing, whether it's roasting or whatever. I'm like, my body's like at some point active around the 5:30 mark. So I used to drag myself out of bed, get down on the couch, walk the dog, whatever, sit down on the couch, and then I'm just in the flow, and then that's it then. And then I'll work through till about 8:30, 9 o'clock when I've got to log on to work and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't really have to work at it. And I know an awful lot of people who I talk to in the writing community and all over Facebook and Twitter and whatever, and they're all saying, oh, I've had writer's block for 3 or 4 weeks. But I mean, touch wood, I've never had it as such, because what I've always done is I've always had ideas. And when I've had the ideas, I've wrote the little ideas down in note form. So if I ever do get writer's block, I've got like a load of notes there that I can access. Getting into the flow has never been a problem for me. It's always just been sort of there. As soon as I sit down, as soon as I'm comfortable, and it can be anywhere. It can be anywhere. It doesn't have to be in like a certain spot, or I haven't got like a little office in my house or whatever. Just open up the laptop and away you go. It's weird because I do my best writing in chaos. So if there's madness going on around me, I can just stick my headphones on, open up my laptop. So I do really good writing in McDonald's and in like coffee shops and stuff like that. And like when my daughter was younger, I used to take it to them, like, you know, them little play things. Like the kiddie town or whatever they call them, they had like the big climbing frames and all And she'd go off and run with all the mates, and I'd just be sitting there with my headphones on and be like squawking kids, running left, right, and centre, and shouting and throwing things and everything. And I'd be like happily typing away. So yes, I would say it's one of them. I've never really had a problem finding the flow. And if I don't find the flow, I just don't push it. I just turn it off and then just go and do something else, because I know the flow's going to come back, so I don't stress about it. It's probably the one thing in life that I don't really stress about.
It's a wonderful thing, though, when you can tap into something like that and feel good about it, because a lot of a lot of writers, a lot of artists are their own worst critic, aren't they? And it sounds like you've got something that you can tap into quite readily. You've got your backup plan, your notes. You'll move away from it if you're not feeling it. But by not putting stress on yourself, it sounds like you're maximising it. I know what you mean about that chaos sometimes when things are going on around you. You can be like the centre of the eye of the storm that's calm, can't you? It's strange.
That's exactly what it is. Sometimes if I'm in the house on my own and like it's just silence, then sometimes it just doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean? I'll have to put the music on. I'm one of them. I can write with the music on loud. You know what I mean? So I throw Slipknot on or something like that, and away I go.
Yeah. So do you know when you write, how do you come up with like the coherence or the themes of the story? Do you let them evolve gradually, or do you have a clear plan before? And how does it kind of work for you?
Yeah, what happens is, say me and my missus are walking the dog along the beach or something like that, and I'll just sit down to Lauren and I'll say, listen, I've just had a boss idea for a book. And she'll just like roll her eyes. So then I get on my phone and I've got like the notes app on your phone. And I'll just tap away and tap away and tap away. And then I'll have a start, a middle, and an ending of a story. And then that just gets saved in my notes. And then I'll come back to that. I might come back to that in a year or 18 months, or I might pick it up straight away. But that's how it works. So basically I get the knot of the story, and then I unravel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. And then all the characters and what the characters do, that all comes as you're unraveling. So it's not something that I don't say like, right, this character's going to be this person and he's going to be like that. And he's going to be that. That's all like the nuance. As long as I've got the story, as long as I've got the key part of the story, that's all the nice bits that you find. Yeah. And it's weird as well, because some of the characters have little lives of their own, and I try to explain this to my mates, like, and they're like, that, well, how can we, because you're writing that story. It's like, but no, so the character will evolve into this person, and then sometimes he won't do what you want him to do at the end to get to the end, because that's not in his character. And then you've got to start thinking about like how you're going to get to the ending that you want, because you can't use that character. It's mad. And some characters die on you as well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you're like, how did he die? Or how did she die? I never wanted that. But they do, because that's just the way it works. It's a crazy thing. It really, really is. But yes, so like, I'm a bit of a planner, but I'm not overly planning. So there's like an... there's a saying for it, like in the writing world, if you're a planet or a pantser. So if you're the planet, or you go by the seat of your pants. But I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
I think that's wonderful, though, the idea that you get like a basic structure, then you fill it all in, and it's almost like it takes on a life of its own. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I remember one of my favorite films, Dead Poets Society. I don't know if you know that scene at the end where they all stand on the desks. And one of them doesn't stand on the desk, the one who betrayed the member of staff, the teacher. And apparently he was meant to. And before it was filmed, he said to the director, I think it was Peter Weir, he said, listen, I don't think my character would have stood up on that desk. And Peter Weir went, you're right, I don't think he would.
Right.
And he didn't.
Yeah.
But that adds to the film so much. And I love that idea that the character and the story takes on a life of its own within the story. Do you know what I mean? I just think that's so nice to hear.
But it's a weird phenomenon, though, because it really is. Because everybody says, well, these people don't exist, so they do whatever you tell them to do. And you're like, well, no, they don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think that's fascinating. So you've done graphic novels. Are they aimed more at adults rather than children or teenage?
I've done both. Like the very first book that I did, we're talking about before, Interesting Times, that's a graphic novel, but that's for kids. So that's like six short stories. And then I've done a sequel to that one, Interesting Times 2. And then that's like, again, it's the same. It's like six horror stories, but they're like graphic novels, comics. And then the graphic novels that I've done is I've done two kids ones, and I've done three adults ones. But it's weird. because it's a weird phenomenon. It's a niche market, the graphic novel market, because if you're, say, for instance, I've got a graphic novel called Doppelganger, which is like a dark psychological horror, and it's like an 18 or a 15 plus. But if you were going to buy your dad, say, a book, he would really be into it. He might really like his horror. I mean, he'd really like Doppelganger, but you probably wouldn't buy him it because he'd look at it and go, I'm not reading the kid's book. But it's not, it's nothing like a kid's book. But the graphic novels are really niche. But if you bought him the novel, he might read it. Do you know what I mean? He might be lying in bed reading it. So it's a bit of a strange one. But yeah, the kids really love it because it's the two kids ones that I've done one called Dolph. And I did a remake of a rewrote Christmas Carol in rhyme. And they're for the kids, them ones. And they really sell. I expect, well, only around Christmas time, like. But the kids love them because it's bright colours and there's pictures of Father Christmas and the reindeers and all that. So,
I've always liked 2000 AD and sci-fi when I was younger. And I read graphic novels now. And I think I told you about when we spoke previously, Mouse, about the Holocaust.
One of the best graphic novels ever written.
You've got Watchmen, which actually made the top 100 novels of all time. It was the only graphic novel to make it. But I've bought adult graphic novels in recent years, and I bought a few myself, and they really are fantastic. And I think people are missing out with this kind of, I wouldn't read a graphic novel. You just get something extra from them, like the mood, the way I've seen Cold, you know, drawn and described in a graphic novel. It's just beautiful.
It's a stigma. It's a little bit of a stigma with the graphic novels because people do associate them with the Beano and the Dandy and stuff like that, which I'm not knocking them because I grew up on them. Do you know what I mean? And they are fabulous. The storytelling in the Beano and stuff like that is brilliant. Yeah. But people do associate the graphic novels with the Beano. But if you read my book, Doppelganger, I mean, it couldn't be any further away from the Beano. I love it. It's my favourite medium, do you know what I mean, for the books, but it's just so expensive to do because I can't draw. I can't draw a stick. I've tried a million times to draw, and I just can't do it. So I've got to get an artist in to do it, and the artist, I mean, obviously, they're not going to come cheap, are they? Well, I've been lucky enough to work with the same artists a number of times in the books that I've done, and they're always like ready and willing to go on to do more stuff for me because they know that I can spin a story and they can draw what I'm asking them to draw. So it's a good little exercise to do, because when you write the novel, there's a thing called show don't tell, which basically what you're doing is instead of saying someone looks shocked, that's telling them that they're shocked. But if you say to them their eyes were wide and the skin turned pale and you could see the machine of sweat on the brow, that's them. That's the reader then knowing that person's shocked, and you can pick the story up in the head. In a graphic novel, it's the other way around. You've got to tell. You can't show because you've got to tell the artist what you want the person to know about when they look at the picture. Bit of a strange one, but it's two different mediums doing the same thing.
Which is
like quite crazy when you think about it.
So you do the graphic novels for adults to children and all between, but you also do conventional novels as well. And you do kids' books and short stories. So how does that all fit together? And do you find that having more than one style, if you know what I mean, satisfies your creative desires more?
It does, you know, because when I write my adult novels, they tend to be horror or thrillers or psychological thrillers and stuff like that. So I also write in a medium called extreme horror, which for the market, the American market for extreme horror is huge. So they're actually, the extreme horrors that I do are actually my best-selling books because over in America, they love them. Yeah. But it's like extreme it's extreme violence, extreme gore, and stuff like that. So if I'm doing a horror, a normal horror, or if I'm doing like an extreme horror, I like to have a palate cleanser. So I'll come down from finishing that book, and then I'll start writing the kids' book, because I use it as like to get like all the horrible negative thoughts out of my mind. So then I can just start with the playful thoughts again. Because I always write with an awful lot of humor, even whether I'm doing like the dark mainstream horror or the extreme horror or the kids. And like I think there's a thing called in the writing world called having your voice. And like the main thing of it, like Stephen King's got his own voice. You can read a Stephen King book and know instantly that it's a Stephen King book, even if no one told you it was. And I like to think I've got a voice, but that voice carries over into my extreme horrors, my mainstream horrors, even my children's books as well. It's still got that same humor, humoristic voice that runs through it. So it's very good for the creative sort of synapses in your brain, because you're thinking of like different things. So when you've got when you've got a kid's book, you can let your imagination soar, yeah. But you've got to be quite constrained in your language. But then when you go into an adult book, you can be as flowery with your language as you want, but you've got to base it in some kind of like reality, if you know what I mean. Because yeah, it's a mad one. It is crazy, but it has really helped me writing across all the genres. I've even wrote a romance book. Yeah. Which I'm not, I probably won't be doing it again, but I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? Again, it was a different bow to your arrow. So it's like, my sister said that she said, you couldn't write a 50 Shades of Grey. So I was like, well, you're right there, I can't, because it's so bad. But I did, I wrote it for her, but she won't read it because there's quite a bit of sex in it.
Yeah, but that's
Yeah.
interesting now about the different styles, because I don't know if you know about the was it Ian Banks and Ian M. Banks, the Scottish writer. He used to
Yeah,
write a sci-fi novel under one name, and then he'd do a bit more of a realistic one, a thriller or a more of a contemporary novel under another name. And I remember seeing he's dead now, isn't he? But I remember I've read a few of his books. I remember he said he'd like kind of get that out, and then he'd go, right, I need to write one of these now, and then go back and
and
forth. And
swing backwards and forwards,
yeah, because you
well,
write under two
but
names as well, don't you, for
yeah,
your
I write
different.
under. Yeah, I write under. For me, adult books, all me horror stuff, for me psychological horrors and extreme horrors, that's all D.E. McCluskey. And then for me kids books, it's Dave McCluskey. As the last thing you want is any of them kids searching your name.
And then they
I
see
go,
all
yeah,
the
look,
horror
yeah,
stuff.
look, mummy, look what else he's wrote. You're like, no, don't read
You won't
that.
be buying any more from him.
We
Well,
won't be, no.
do you know your kids' books? Do they have a particular commonality of theme, or are they a bit more like kind of free to storytelling type things? How does that
Well,
work?
I do like. I tend to write about Christmas when it's about like the kids stuff. I absolutely love Christmas. I'm this time of year is my favorite time of year.
Excuse
So,
me.
what I do is I've got a I've just brought out a kids picture book now called Santa's Lost Boot, which is just like a small rhyming story about Father Christmas looking for his boot. And I've got a kids chapter novel called Seagull's Tale. And that's like a full-on novel, but it's like something that you would read to the kids, if you know what I mean. And it's really funny. But they're all in the same universe. So Father Christmas in Santa's Lost Boot is actually turns up in Seagull's Tale when he's on his holidays. And then I've wrote another book called Ulf, which is a graphic novel at the moment, but I've just rewrote it as a novel with a different with a bit of a different take on it. And that's again, that's all about Father Christmas and stuff like that. That's like an I mean, my Ulf one's a bit of a. I'm hoping that I can get some traction out of this Ulf one, because what it is, it's about this reindeer, and he's like the no, he's the best reindeer in Father Christmas's Sleigh Academy, but he's naughty, right? And he's horrible, and every and all the other reindeers don't like him, and Father Christmas doesn't like him, and his mum and dad are like tearing their antlers out trying to deal with him, and it turns out that he's got Tourette's, and he can't help being naughty. But all the kids, all the reindeers play a trick on him, and his nose starts glowing, and he becomes Rude Ulf, the red nosed reindeer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm just hashtag spoilers there. But but what I want to do is I wanted to highlight the fact that the kid who is a little bit naughty, and like all the other kids don't want to play with him, or the teachers can't be bothered with him or whatever. You know, it might not be his fault.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So yeah, so I'm trying to highlight that in the books, as well as making them funny as well.
That sounds really interesting. Did you say you had a possible film in the offing, or do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, what we're doing, I wrote a book called In the Mood for Murder, and it's set in Liverpool, in Bootle, in 1946. And it's set in Bootle, and it's set in the Rialto. The Rialto ballrooms used to be in Toxteth. Yeah. And they got burnt down during the riots. It's all about the swing bands, and it's all about this drummer who's like, he's got like this big ego and stuff like that. And, you know, are some things worth killing for? And the band are about to find out, if you know what I mean. So, but yeah, I've got him. I got hit up by some guy who, right out the blue, he said, I downloaded your book off Kindle, read it, love it. Do we want to do a film? And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, that's sad. But that was like 4 years ago. And we've been in touch constantly ever since. And we've done, and since that, we've got, because he's a screenwriter, he's a director, he's won a BAFTA. He's won a BAFTA for screenwriting as well. So he's adapted the novel into the script. And we've got like something like 12 or 15 iterations of it. So it's done. We've got the sizzle reel, we've got the deck, we've got all the artwork for it. We're just in the process now of getting the funding together. So it's just that's the hard bit. Do you know what I mean? We've been working on it for about. We've been working on it for 4 years, and I think we've been looking at trying to get the funding for about 18 months. But we got like all sorts of meetings and stuff like that. We got a few meetings with a few guys in Bootle who were like big in the television series industry. And we got an interest in it in California as well, but a company called Anonymous Entertainment over in California. And they're quite big as well. They don't own, but they've got like the likes of George Clooney and stuff like that is on their books. So we're hoping that there might be some traction in that. Might get George Clooney over to Bootle. Get him having a bevy in the mountain. Yeah.
Yeah. Take him to Hyper Bar and see how he likes it. No, that's great. And, you know, it's good to see that you've got that recognition. I know these things can take a long time to kind of develop, etc. But it sounds like you've got such a rich body of work and some real appeal there. Now, you do school literacy and writing workshops as well, don't you? Does that go alongside your other job? Because I wanted to talk to you about how do you envisage a future where you can write as part of your job part-time or full-time? Yeah. You're still doing a 9-to-5, and how do the workshops fit into that?
Well, what I'm doing at the moment is I'm looking at setting these workshops up. I've done one or two, and I've got a couple of bookings coming into 2023. But I would love to make it as my permanent job, because the job that I'm doing at the moment it's just like a little 9-to-5, and you know it's not very taxing and stuff like that on my brain. So which is good, because I used to be into IT and stuff like that, and I worked in the nuclear industry and stuff, and I didn't really have an awful lot of time to myself. But this job that I've got now, I seem to have quite a bit of time, so I can actually do a little bit. I hope no one's listening who works with me. It's like, yeah, I've got loads of time. But what I want to do is I would leave that job tomorrow, because I don't see a future in that job, if you know what I mean. It is literally not a career, it's a job. What I want to do is I want to go into the schools, and I want to do this in the schools. Now, I've done the research, and I know I can work Liverpool, Houghton, Knowsley, Sefton, the Whittle, and combined in them schools, there's like 500 primary schools combined into them areas. So, you know, there's a lot of work there if you can dig it out. You just got to get past the headmasters and stuff like that. Yeah. But what I want to do is, I know a lot of the schools have an awful lot of like authors come in, and they're going in and they're telling the kids that about the books that they've written and read them a little story, and then they're trying to push selling the books to the kids and stuff like that. And that's great, because it is getting the kids to see that there is something different. But what I want to do it differently. I want to sell my books, but I'm not, that's secondary to what I want to do. I want to go in and I want to get the kids believing to themselves that they can be an author. Yeah. Or it doesn't have to be an author. They can be whatever they want. So what I'm doing is, in the workshops that I'm doing with the kids, I'm saying, right, you're all going to be authors today, and you're all going to write your own story. And they're like, oh, and so I want you to come up with a title. So like, sir, can this be the title? And I'm like, the title is yours. Nobody can tell you whether it's right or whether it's wrong, because it's your story. And because the kids, because like the way the kids are brought up and stuff like that, it's linear, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So yeah. Like they're told that they're having a tea at this time, and they're told that they're going to bed at this time. So it's all quite regimental. So what I want the kids to do is open up their imaginations, and they come out of the workshop with me with their own story that they have created. I've had no input in that story whatsoever. I've just told them that they can do it. So they come up with their own title, they draw their own main character, they come up with the story, and then they take the story home to show the mum and dad and put the ending, come up with the ending, and the teacher gets them to bring it in on the Friday or whatever. So it's their own story. Yeah, it's them creating something that nobody can tell them whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's completely theirs. And when I've done it a couple of times now for the kids, and they absolutely, sorry, I've just come over here because I needed to charge my phone. They seem to really, really love it. They seem to like get on board with it, because it's their own thing.
Yeah,
it's a lovely thing to see. It really, really is.
Yeah. And that sounds like really positive as well. Now, you said, I think you mentioned that primary schools get some funding for external visitors. And it sounds like, as you said, it's usually they're being told, aren't they, you need to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And you're saying, no, this is your story. And then they get to be really creative, and then they've got kind of ownership of it all, isn't it? That's how it works.
So they walk out of the school that day with a great big piece of paper with their own story that they have created. And, you know, the main thing what I'm doing to them, I mean, because, you know, obviously you've got to be told you've got to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G for the curriculum and stuff like that. But also, I want to tell them that you know, they can do their own thing, and nobody can tell them if they're doing their own thing that it's wrong. Because it can't be wrong. There's no such thing as a bad idea or a stupid idea when you're doing a story, because it's your story.
Yeah, I think that's powerful, but particularly in this day and age, because some of the best stuff I enjoyed from my primary school was when I used to write stories. I mean, I used to love writing stories. I can still remember them. And someone said to me recently that in your own mind, you want to be doing what you were doing when you were about 10 years of age. And someone said to me, what were you doing when you were 10? Like, I don't know how true it is, but I said, I was in school writing stories, like as happy as Larry. Absolutely loved it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think what happens is, as you get older, that inner critic then suppresses that.
I think
that's the great tragedy, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Well, it's not only the inner critic, though. It's the world.
Absolutely,
the world starts, because then you leave school, you go to university, you have a little bit of a wild time in university, and you can do whatever you want to do, and then you get a job, and then you're told what to do in the job, and you're told whether you're doing it right or whether you're doing it wrong, and you're told what to do, and you're told how to do it, and you're told the hours that you need to do it in, whereas this is just pure freedom. Do you know what I mean? So it just gives I think it gives the kids a little something else to think about. And I know they're only 8, 9, and 10, but I think you remember stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like one of the teachers in one of the schools I've been in, she keeps messaging me on Twitter and saying there's a little girl who absolutely loved the workshop, and she keeps coming in with different stories each week. So she's going home and she's writing stories, and they're all her own stories. And she keeps coming in and sending them to the teachers. And the teachers are like, this little kid has gone from, I don't know which kid it was, but when I was in the class, I always asked the question, who's got an imagination? Like, and all the kids throw their hands up and stuff like that, but there's always one or two who don't. And I sort of like go, what? I don't think you've got an imagination. And this was a little girl who didn't put a hand up for it, thinking she had an imagination. And now she's gone. And she's creating all her own stories constantly. And I think that's boss.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm actually really proud of the fact that, like, I've opened that up for her, if you know what I mean. And I really hope that she goes on. And, you know, whether she becomes an author or not, or just as long as she uses that creativity somehow.
Yeah. I think that's amazing, because I know a few colleagues. I'm a teacher, a secondary school teacher, and I know a few colleagues in primary have said that in recent years, there's less and less work in the topic book where they just write a bit more freely about things, because it's so much about making sure you can do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And as you said, there's a place for that. But when we lose that creativity, I just think it stultifies us as emotional beings and as full human beings as well. You know what I mean?
You lose a little piece of you when you lose that creativity. And you know what? For years and years and years, I lost it. I mean, my mum always said to me, she said, you know, when I was in school, I used to come home and like had this like great imagination, and I would write little stories. I don't remember doing it. She said I would write little stories and stuff like that, and I don't remember it. But I obviously lost that somewhere along the way. And then, you know, something's kicked it back in again in my old age.
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's a great tragedy to suppress that. Not because, you know, it's not relevant or that's not how you survive in the world, but just in terms of people's expression and identity. You know, you don't have to get a job in it or marketize it, but I just think it's lovely when you can be in touch with those kinds of feelings. When I was a kid, I used to get ideas for stories, and it was like this voice saying, whoa, like, get this written down. And I lost that for years. And partly doing this podcast is me kind of saying, no, I want that inner expression.
You want a little bit of it back again,
You know, it's like taking back control kind of thing. Yeah.
The mad thing is, though, is that it's not a young person's game. It's not an old person's game. It's not a middle-aged person's game. I mean, I started doing it again when I was about, you know, I'm 49 now. I've been doing it for 10 years. So 39 I was when I kicked in. So, you know, I was near 40. So people always think to yourself, you know, can you do a career change at 40? And, you know, if you've got it in you, yeah, you can.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
People always say to me, oh, I'd love to write a book. How do you go about doing it? And the best advice I give everyone is just do it.
Yeah.
No one's going to do it for you. So if you've got that idea in your head, and if you've got the idea that you want to write the story, just do it. Because the process of writing is you write a first draft, right? And that gets the story down. And then you write it again, and then you write it again. Now, sometimes I do about 12, 15, sometimes 18 iterations of a book until I know it's good enough then to send off to my editor. You're not going to get it on the first pass. No one ever gets it on the first pass. Tolkien didn't get it on the first pass. But, you know, you just got to go and do it. And you just got to have that tenacity in you to just say, listen, I want to get this out, even if it's just for my own.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm genuinely inspired by this. And whenever I have people who are creative on, I always get inspired because I always feel like, oh, this could have been me. But it literally can be anyone at any time, in any way. And I mean, I've been writing today. I've been writing this morning in a coffee shop. Whenever I was in a coffee shop this morning, there was two people on laptops working or doing stuff. There was me writing. And then there was all these people just sitting around talking or just looking out the window. And I'm just thinking to them, like, How can you waste this opportunity to be in a coffee shop and not to write? But I suppose that's just the creative in me.
Yeah, all my mates give me grief because they always just say, "Oh yeah, there's you, Mr. Ostentatious, sitting in a laptop and staring out the window, thinking about your news, about where the next story's coming from." But you know, it is the world set up now for you to just go out and be creative. Well, you don't have to be writing books. You could be writing poetry. You could be writing scripts. You could write music. And nowadays, on your phone and on your laptop and stuff like that, you've got a whole recording studio there on your laptop. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but what I want to get away from, what I want to get the kids away from, and you know, is this whole idea that you can be like the Kardashians, or you can be like The Only Way Is Essex and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? And it's I think it's dumbing down. It's dumbing down an awful lot of the kids' creativity, because you know they just want to live this wag lifestyle, and they don't want to read books because they can just look at 35-second videos on YouTube and stuff like that. I want the kids to get their attention spans back, and have enough attention span to watch a film, to read a full book. Do you know what I mean? And then start writing their own book. Get it away from your phone and from the rubbish that's being thrown at your left, right, and centre and stuff like that. And do your own thing. Be your own person.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm genuinely inspired, Dave. And we'll put some details for your websites and stuff and ways people can access your book and your work in the notes. But I mean, we've covered quite a lot, but is there any other advice that you give for writers or creatives? One of the key things I think I picked up is the idea of just do it, just get it done, get it down, then you can edit it and do it all later. The idea that it doesn't matter how old you are, you can change. You've explained how you kind of discipline yourself and that, but is there anything else that we haven't covered that you might want to mention?
What I talk about with the kids is that there's no such thing as a bad idea. There's no such thing as a wrong idea. So people say to me, can I write this book? And I'm like, of course you can write the book. Is it okay to write this book? And I was like, listen, said, I write about Father Christmas. I write about ghosts that disembowel people. And I write about like dysfunctional families in America who end up eating people and stuff. You know, there's no such thing as a wrong idea. It's whatever. Yeah. It's whatever goes through your head. So like, I think my writing career has been a little bit hampered because I don't stay in genre. So D.E. McCluskey, I've just released a three-part fantasy saga. All three parts came out this year, and it's under the D.E. McCluskey name, but it's not horror. It's more like young adult. But so that means now that I've wrote extreme horror, mainstream horror, zombie novels, romance novels, thrillers, historical thrillers, and now fantasy and kids. So it does kind of hamper you because, like, you know, a lot of the people in America, they like, I like horror and I won't read nothing else. Do you know what I mean? And like a lot of people over here, I like thrillers and I won't read horror because horror's crap. You know, because of the fact that I haven't stuck with a genre, maybe has hampered my career because my fan base, and it's weird to talk about a fan base, but I do have people who read me, but they will read everything that I bring out, regardless of whether it is, you know, like whatever genre. But it can hamper you a little bit. But at the end of the day, you've got to write what you've got to write. It's going through your head, and you've got to get it out. So it comes back to just do it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's no such thing as a wrong idea. No such thing as a bad idea, and you've just got to do it because no one's going to do it for you. They're my three bits of advice.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I mean, you've explained your approach to it and how you do it and your body of work, etc., and your idea of school literacy and inspiration. But that was fantastic. I often find as well, when I talk about creativity, there's like a spark inside me that just gets kind of just so excited. And I just think it's great when we can get creativity out into the mainstream, a bit more kind of at a local level in terms of people expressing themselves and just taking ownership of their lives, etc. So, Dave, thanks very much for your time.
Mate, thank you for having me on, because it's been a ball. I've really enjoyed it. Not that I love more than talking about myself.
No, but the creative stuff, mate, is it just inspires me, and I hope it inspires some of our listeners. What we'll do as well in the notes, I'll put some of the links to your work in there, and people can check you out.
Go ahead, mate.
So, Dave, thanks very much for coming on, everyone. If you can like, subscribe, share, contribute through coffee.com, if you can. The cost of a cup of coffee once a month. I'm a bit under the weather this month, this episode. So thanks for bearing with me with my croaky voice. But Dave, you've been very inspirational. Thanks for telling us your story. Check out Dave's work and get creative this Christmas and New Year, folks, because as Dave said, there's only one person in your life who can take the bull by the ring, and that's you. Get out there and get creative. And connect with your inner creative self. So, Dave, thanks very much. Cheers, mate.
Mate, thank you for having me. Cheers, man.